Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Ease podcast for May the 21st, 2021. This is episode number 59. Our top stories today, Ford F-150 Lightning debuts with mega power frunk. Tesla Model S Plaid special delivery event is coming soon. Canoe names its price as it opens orders. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge with Tom Malogny. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And we have Jordan Schiffer joining us from Out of Spec Studios. He works with Kyle Connor, who puts together the Phantasmagorial videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. Please subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. Kyle may join us. He is in the air at the moment. And so airplane Wi-Fi being what it is, we'll see how well that works out. So welcome, ladies and gentlemen of the panel and audience. Let's kick it off by talking about what's charging in our driveways this week. Actually, Jordan, besides the Ford F-150, have you been driving anything electric this week?
Not this week. I've had a couple zeros with Kyle recently, zero motorcycles, but that's about it electric-wise.
Are you a motorcycle guy?
I am, yeah. Well, sort of. Electric motorcycles. I've had gas ones too, but they didn't quite cut it for me. So
really? Okay, so we here on the podcast, we haven't really met you, Jordan. I watched your video with Kyle. You went for a ride along in the Ford F-150 Lightning the other day. Mm-hmm. So I watched that video. That's what I know about you. So I don't know. Hey, why don't we start off by just introducing yourself? Just give us a really quick bio or background, or tell us about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, my background is information technology and video production, but I'm really into cars as of the last few years. So I've kind of taken a deep dive into, I guess it kind of started with Tesla. My brother worked at Tesla kind of at the same time Kyle did, maybe a bit after. So they have mutual friends too, which is kind of funny. But I've just really dove deep into cars and the car scene out in Colorado. I really enjoy. And I'm specifically a Miata enthusiast, but I'll basically drive anything, which I've been driving all sorts of things for Kyle lately.
Right on.
I've been really intrigued by, you know, being kind of a techie person. I love seeing the invocation of tech and EVs, mm-hmm. especially. So,
right on. Is there an EV coming that you think you would like to have, like in place of a Miata? Let's maybe a Miata like. I don't know.
Not yet. That's the market I'm kind of anticipating eagerly. So I'm still holding out. I mean, we know the Boxster EV was kind of discussed or talked about, but not really revealed anyway. We got years before that comes, and it won't really be Miata price. So that's maybe a glimpse of some sort of future. I drove a Tesla Roadster a few weeks ago, and that was like somewhat similar.
Right.
But
it's not really like a real true convertible though, right?
Yeah, that was more of a Targa, but
yeah. Right. Yeah. Convertibles is one of those areas that, you know, there's just nothing yet. Actually, we saw a rumor, I think earlier this week, there may be a convertible Taycan. Tom, do you know anything about that?
To be honest with you, I hadn't seen that rumor. No.
Right. I don't know if it was online. We had a piece about cross Turismo have different forms, but I don't know. It was just somewhere, I guess, in my travels, I saw convertible Taycan and it got my attention for a moment, but anyway, that's not.
That'd be awesome, but I'm guessing it might be out of Jordan's price range. Mere mortals, you know, can't afford the regular Taycan. Make it a convertible and see where that's going to go. It would be fantastic.
Somehow it loses body panels and gets becomes more money.
Exactly. But Jordan, I will tell you one thing. My good friend John Hyam out in California years ago converted a Miata. He and his son took it up as a project and built it over the course of like 2 years. And he drove it for a few years. I think it had about a 50-mile range, something like that. And then he just sold it recently. So there's one of them out there floating around. I could probably have him track it down for you if you're really interested.
Yeah, there was a few Miata conversion projects going back in the day when there was a lot of conversions coming where you couldn't buy an EV. So a lot of people were converting them with whatever they could find. And there were a few Miatas done. So that's always a possibility. And now you could get like batteries and motors, like a lot cheaper from, you know, just salvage EVs. But hey, speaking of Tycon, though, Tom, I believe you were in the Tycon Cross Turismo for a little bit, doing a 70-mile-an-hour test and maybe some charging.
Yeah. So I had I actually had pinged Porsche a couple of weeks ago. I actually took the first vacation that I've taken since COVID, drove up to Maine, and I pinged Porsche and said, hey, do you have anything for me? Because I'd love to do maybe a Tycon road trip going up the East Coast from New Jersey to Maine, get some really cool pictures up in Kennebunkport and so forth. And the answer I got was, look, your timing is perfect. Almost. We just got the first Cross Turismo in, and it's a German spec car, but it was going to be ready like 3 days after I left for my trip. So unfortunately that didn't work, but he said, they told me as soon as you come back, if you want, you'll be the first one we'll prep the car for and we'll give it to you, but it's only a 24-hour loan. This wasn't a regular loan. So I see one of the comments here, Gary Clark seems to want to know everything about the car. unfortunately I had it for less than 24 hours. I had to just do range test, charging test. So I didn't get to fully test it out, Gary, but I will be getting another one maybe in a month or so once they have the more of them here and their US spec. The reason why Porsche wasn't loaning this out longer was it has German control module in it. The nav system doesn't work. The infotainment system doesn't work. It was kind of like a crippled car. They even warned me. They said, we don't know if this will charge properly. So we know you like to do charging tests, but you know, you're not going to get maximum charge rate. Like, you know, there could be some issues. And there was. As soon as I got the thing home, I realized it wasn't charging on level two. Luckily, the Tycon has charge ports on both sides of the vehicle, the left and the right. So the charge port on the driver's side, the left side of the car, that didn't work on level two. But when I went to the other side where it's the DC fast and level two, I could charge it there. So immediately I knew there was going to be a problem. So to make a long story short, I charged the thing up, get out on the New Jersey Turnpike. That's do my loops. And it went 246 miles at 70 miles an hour. Pretty good for considering. I mean, the regular Tycons have gone further, but we would expect that. Kyle did the rear wheel drive base Tycon, and that went 293 miles. Now, that would have, of course, gone furthest because it's just a rear wheel drive and it's going to go further just by nature. This, all the Cross Turismos are all wheel drive and they all come standard with the Performance Plus battery pack. So even the base Cross Turismo has the 93.4 kilowatt hour battery pack. So we did 246. For me, that I think that was a huge win. It's not EPA range rated, so we don't have anything to measure it against, but the EPA range rating is probably going to come in at like 210, 215. If you go by what the other Porsche EPA range ratings are compared to what we then do in our range tests. So I roll into the Electrify America charging station at 0% and it won't charge. And I'm stuck there. I'm plugging in all the different charging stations. It's not charging. And I can't ping Electrify America on this. Porsche warned me that this has all European electronics. They haven't tested it on US charging and so forth. So I get Electrify America on the phone. First, I went through a regular tech service and I'm on the phone for like an hour and we're trying everything. So then I call my contacts there and I'm like, look, this, I have to call Porsche and have this towed back. I really don't want to do that. Can you try to help me here? So they call Porsche and we're on the phone for another hour. Finally, they disabled plug-in charge on the charging station. Because they think it was trying to initiate plug and charge, but it's a different handshake for Europe and here. And to make a long story short, I got it to charge. And it actually did really well. I don't have all the data done yet. This was just a day ago, so I haven't crunched it all. And I was only at 150 kilowatt hour DC fast charger, but it held that 150 kilowatts all the way up to 73% state of charge. Wow. So these things are range and charging beasts, Tycons, all of them. Fantastic, the charging curve on these cars. Kyle and I have both gone over this many times. It really, these are road tripping cars. If I had my choice and money was no object, I'd take the Cross Turismo over the base Tycon. And I love the base Tycon. It's got so much more room in there. My buddy of mine's a retired New York City fireman. He's like 6'6", 280 pounds, big guy. He sat in the back seat of this and he couldn't believe it. He was like, I've got 4 or 5 inches of headroom in the back. I'm 6'6". So yeah, it was it checks a lot of boxes, and I think it's a fantastic car.
It looks pretty good.
What's the in terms of charging? Obviously, over here, if it's a German car, we have Type 2 with its little seven little dimples, and you have Type 1 with its five. Did they do some sort of crude swap out of the charging sockets then, so at least you could charge it?
Yeah, it has the Type 1, J1772 and CCS. But like, you know, Porsche's kind of saying, yeah, they just kind of like, you know, ripped it apart and put that in there. And then it has to get tested. You know, I mean, that's why we see so many the problems with, say, Electrify America. A lot of the problems are the manufacturers don't provide the Electrify America with the cars long enough before the release, because they have to do a lot of testing to make sure under all different circumstances the cars work. That's one of the huge advantages Tesla has. You know, they're so vertically integrated. They make the cars, they make the charging equipment, they install the charging equipment, they make the software. You know, when you're dealing with a company like Electrify America or ChargePoint or EVgo, whatever, they have 50 different electric vehicles. Many of them have slightly different electronic handshakes. And then they have three different vendors that they're dealing with that have to implement that to make it work. So it's a complicated process. And, you know, they were, you know, Electrify, when I was talking to Electrify, they're kind of a little annoyed. They're like, I can't believe Porsche, you know, put this car out there. It's, you know, they shouldn't be giving it to journalists because, you know, they're going to have problems, and then they're going to report that it's our fault when it's not. And so, you know, I said, well, you know me, I understand charging probably more than the guy from, you know, just, a lot of the other just basic automobile things. Yeah.
More than anyone.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, one of the things that does frustrate me, listen, Electrify America has a lot of faults. They need to improve their service, period. But a lot of YouTube channels and other, not necessarily electric vehicle websites, but other automotive websites, they'll get a Mustang Mach-E or something on loan, and they'll go and the headline will be charging station fail. And when you really look at what happened, it was their fault. You know, they didn't initiate the charge right, or they didn't. Now, I know it should be easy, so there's no problems. And often they're driving pre-production vehicles where the software hasn't been completely worked out yet, you know, and that would have been the case like this. If they give this to just the average person, you know, they're going to be reporting, this car stinks, you can't even charge it. But, you know, but Porsche did tell me ahead of time, we're not sure you're going to be able to charge it, but we're going to give it to you, Tom, because we know you know what you're doing.
But out of interest, though, what's in it for Porsche to bring such a rough car to the US, a full of European bits, not going to work properly? What's in it for them?
So from what I understand, they're going to be very selective in who they give this to until it's updated. And that's why I was the first person to get it here on the East Coast. So, you know, I don't know if this is going to go completely. I mean, like I said, they didn't reach out to me and say, hey, Tom, we have a Taycan Cross Turismo. I called Porsche and said, look, I'm going on this road trip. Do you have a Cross Turismo? It'd be a great car for a road trip. And they're like, well, we're going to have one in about 10 days. We haven't, you know, fully updated it yet. And we'll let you have it. And of course, we're going to take it, you know?
Yeah.
So when you did the range test, you did it in eco mode. Does it have the same as a regular Taycan, the front wheel sort of back wheels disengaged? So you just run it on front wheel drive?
Yeah, so if once I get this video up, you'll see I actually even recorded, because the Taycan allows you to configure the driver's display to show you if it's driving in front wheel, rear wheel, or in you know, combined. So I actually talk a little bit about that. And what I notice is when you're just cruising along at a steady 70 miles an hour, it's mostly switches to front wheel drive and decouples the rear motor. But then as soon as I'm going up even the slightest incline where you could barely tell you're going up an incline, you see the power meter shift to the rear motor. So it intelligently is always figuring out what is the most efficient mode of driving. And it constantly does that when you're in range mode. And that's what I was in range mode.
Right on. All right. Jordan, you have any questions about the Taycan Cross Turismo?
No, it just looks amazing. I'm a huge fan of the kind of station wagon or whatever you call it in Europe. I think they look fantastic. I haven't driven one yet, either that or a Taycan, but I'm intrigued. I've been intrigued from the very beginning.
Well, I know Kyle has a relationship with Porsche as well, and so there is a chance that you'll be behind the wheel of a Taycan at some point before too long.
I'll need to.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to the big news of the week. And I think it's safe to say that the Ford F-150 Lightning is that the big news of the week, maybe the month. So it made its official debut Wednesday night. I think a lot of us spent yesterday trying to take in all the info and a lot of the many first impressions that were coming out, most of which were positive. I think it's safe to say that it's a traditional looking truck with a lot of non-traditional performance and functionality. So before we get right into it, let's do a quick overview of the Lightning. It's an all-electric pickup truck available only in a crew cab with a 5.5 box and all-wheel drive. Unlike the combustion F-150, it has an independent rear suspension. It comes with one of two different battery sizes, standard range and extended range. We don't know exactly what those batteries are in kilowatt hours, but the standard range puts out 426 horsepower and has 774 pound-feet of torque and a targeted EPA range of 230 miles. Payload is a full ton, and it can tow 7,700 pounds. It starts at $39,974 for what they call a commercial-oriented model. I'm doing air quotes, commercial-oriented. It's basically a very base model. The more equipped XLT starts at $52,974. The extended range version of this offers more horsepower, 563, and the same 775 torques as a standard range. So its targeted EP range is 300 miles. Its maximum payload is a little lower at 1,800 pounds, but it tows more, 10,000 pounds. Expect the top trim extended range Lightning Platinum to reach $90,474. The extended range will do 0-60 in mid 4 seconds, while the standard range is mid 5 seconds. So this is the quickest Ford pickup ever, quicker than even the original Ford F-150 Lightning Sport Truck, which was actually built to go fast with superchargers. So let's talk charging. So its peak DC fast charging power acceptance is like 150 kilowatts, which is a bit on the low side, I think, for 2022. This is probably a 400-volt system. So it takes a standard range version to charge from 15 to 80%, about 44 minutes. So, and the extended range only takes 3 minutes more at 44 minutes, or no, so the, that should be 41 minutes and then 44 minutes. There are a number of different home charging options. Both versions come with a 32 amp portable charging cord, like you get with a Mustang Mach-E, that you can plug into either a 120 or 240 volt outlet. You can opt for a 48-amp charger, which gives you about 19 to 20 miles an hour, depending on the standard range or extended range version. But if you get the extended range battery, we have some good news. It comes standard with this remarkable 80-amp Ford Charge Station Pro. So not only does this let you charge at 19.2 kilowatts, which adds about 30 miles an hour of range, but 19 again in standard range truck, but you can use it to power your house. So this is like kind of a big deal, I think. So if your battery is full, it will let you use up to 90 kilowatt hours of energy at a maximum flow of 9.6 kilowatts. That's enough, they say, to power your house for 3 days if there's a power outage, or up to 10 days if you take it easy on the juice. So that's pretty cool. But they also say that at some point in the future, if you are somewhere where you get charged for your electricity by time of use, you'll be able to plug in your truck and then turn and run your truck off, run your house off the truck in the daytime when power is expensive, then charge it back up again at night when the power is more cheaper. So that's a pool party trick, and it will also save you money. So there's lots of other cool features that we want to talk about, but before we get too far, I wanted to have Tom tell us who can likely take advantage of this, because I don't think every house has the fuse box and possibly even the power supply to deal with an 80 amp vehicle charger. Also, Tom, it seems to me this would need some sort of specialized installation to prevent it from sending energy out to the grid. So there must be some sort of switch switchover involved here, right?
Yeah, we don't have all that information, but there'll obviously have to be some kind of transfer switch that, you know, you won't be backfeeding the grid through your house in the case of a power outage. Like, for instance, I have my solar array here on my house. I also have a natural gas generator. And when the power out, when we have a power outage here, my solar gets shut off automatically because if I wasn't using all the energy it was producing, I'd be backfeeding the grid, and then somebody fixing the power somewhere down the road could get shocked. So I'm sure they have that all worked out. There must be some sort of an additional. I doubt if it would be built into the Ford's 80 amp EVSC. Is probably going to be a secondary piece of equipment that you'll have to buy, and they'll have to install that. And that's something that, I'm really interested in. I'd love to get a hold of one of those. I'm sure I will once this thing comes out. But the fact that one of the things I love about this also is that it can deliver 9.6 kilowatts to the house.
Right.
Now, we talked a lot about the Hyundai Ioniq 5. And how great that was that it had vehicle to load and all this stuff. That the maximum output for that, I believe it was 3.8 kilowatts. So that's great. And I love it. And you know what? You can power your refrigerator and your lights and your computer. You can get by with basic stuff in the house. But 10 kilowatts, you can power, a small air conditioner. You could really do a lot in your home with 10 kilowatts. But getting back to your original point, yeah. There's a lot of houses in the U.S. that would not be able to support this without a complete service upgrade. The 80 amp EVSC is what we're talking about. Many of the homes have a 100 amp main on the house.
Right.
So, yeah, this isn't going to be for everyone. But I suspect a lot of the people that are dropping 70,000 or 80,000 on a pickup truck, these are private people. I'm talking about not businesses. They're going to use this as their daily driver, which, as we know here in America, a lot of people use their pickup trucks to go to the supermarket and not as work trucks. I'd imagine a lot of people that are playing in that ballpark of money for buying a new vehicle, many of those live in areas that have adequate electric supply in their house, 200 amp mains, and so forth, where you could actually set this thing up and have it work.
Right. So let's talk about a few more features real quick, and then we'll go to Jordan for some impressions from his ride along. So this has the Mega Power Frunk. It's got a 14.1 cubic foot big old frunk in the front. It'll hold 400 pounds. It's water resistant with a drainable floor. It has four electrical outlets in there and two USB chargers. So that's pretty cool. But it also has another trick. It, along with the bed of the vehicle, have what they're calling onboard scales, which is pretty much what it sounds like. It can tell you how much weight you're carrying in the frunk or the bed or both, and then it will automatically adjust its estimated range based on the payload. So I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool. I don't know, Jordan, have any ideas for like usage of this thing?
I think it makes sense it helps you know whether or not you're getting close to the payload, because most people, you're not loading in luggage and looking at it and saying, yeah, it's about 1,200 pounds total. It helps you kind of measure the exact amount of stuff you're putting. And so they had up to 400 pounds in the frunk, which was pretty impressive. So they displayed that at the actual event with 400 pounds of cement. The powder mix, yeah.
Yeah, that's
kind of funny. And the frunk can also fit two full-size sets of golf clubs and a full, suit, check bag and two carry-ons. So they made a big deal they were so excited about the Mega Power Frunk, as they call it.
Right.
Frunk. Yeah, it's a great name, and it grabs your attention. And so the scales should be interesting. I couldn't tell from the event or even their photos whether or not actually differentiated between the frunk and the bed. And I don't know exactly what they're using to do the scales. And theoretically, the truck should be able to tell you how much you're towing as well. Of course, that's only the actual weight, not the aerodynamics of the trailer. So that's not going to be super helpful when determining range. But I'm curious to see how well this will actually alter the range predictions correctly.
Right.
But it also has to figure in topography.
Right.
Because are you towing it up a mountain or are you towing it down a mountain? You know, it's that kind of makes a huge difference with range.
Well, it has the truck itself has what they're calling intelligent range. So they say on their site, with intelligent range, your truck learns how much energy it uses in various conditions. It accurately calculates range while factoring in weather, traffic, grade, payload, towing weights, and more. So that's pretty impressive.
If it works, it's impressive.
I think it'll take a lot of data to get it configured correctly. And so I don't know if it will work right away, but I think it will work long term.
Right. It did say it'll learn. So that's an odd thing. I'm not sure. So it's not a power frunk though, right? It isn't open. It's not like a hatchback, right? It doesn't have...
It is power, yeah.
Oh, really? So you can just like click a button on your key fob or something or your phone. Yeah. I guess it has key as phone, so...
There's four or five ways to open the front, which is pretty cool.
Oh, really?
And it's all power lifted. So just like the tailgate.
What are the ways?
There's a way to do it on the key, I think, and then the infotainment. And then there's actually, if you get the Ford's option with the 5-digit passcode on the door, you can configure a certain set of digits to open it. And then I think there's a button below the frunk in the front.
Okay. That's pretty cool then. Yeah, that's awesome. So I was wondering, if it's not that easy to access, you know, how often are people going to use it? But if it's like that, you know, that easy,
I think it's a great option for a pickup truck. Having exterior lockable storage is a big deal because most people, you can get bed covers or whatever, you know, the things that go over top. But if you have this in the front that is, you know, also dry, like you said, the bed covers don't necessarily keep your bed contents dry or safe and secure. So I think this will be used quite a bit.
Right. We used to always see those, what they call those aluminum plate toolbox things in the back. And, you know, people will be able to, you know, take advantage of all their bed space if they use the front to hold their tools.
So that's more easily accessible than those big locking things where you have to climb up and get it. This is fantastic. It's one of the things that stood out to me when I saw the Rivian for the first time with the giant frunk in the front. It was, okay, how do I lift stuff that's heavy in and out of here? You know, almost need like a winch to pull it up because, you know, it's so deep when you're reaching in. That's why I love these designs that we're seeing now that the Ford has where it's that front loading where it's power opening up and then you could slide stuff in and out. That's really convenient.
Yeah, it takes the grill with it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool.
The Hummer is like that too, the Hummer EV. Mm-hmm. That's good. We haven't seen the Cybertruck. Does it even have a frunk? It's going to be a frunkless Tesla.
We haven't seen that truck. You know, last September, Elon tweeted that, you know, we're going to show you the final production version in 2 weeks.
Right.
Last September.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see. And I'm a Cybertruck reservation holder.
Right.
You know, after seeing this that night, I quickly jumped over to the Ford website and plunked down $100.
What?
And so I reserved one. And let's see. You know, I don't know. You know, I could get the Cybertruck. I could get this. I want an electric pickup truck. I love the Rivian, but they're a little bit out of my price range. It looks like both of these vehicles may fall within my price range. So yeah, there's Martin's got my reservation up there. You know, listen, I would get either one. I like, you know, I think this is a better truck, the Lightning, but I'm sure the Cybertruck is going to be a better electric vehicle. So, you know, they're both going to have their pluses and minuses.
How much do you think you're going to spend on this F-150? Because that $39,000, that's like basically like a stripper model, like for commercial, you know, like fleets, basically. I think you're going to want to have the extended range battery, mm-hmm. and you're going to want to have some features like big screen, the big vertical screen, like the board from the Mustang Mach-E.
Sure.
That only comes in certain trim levels, like the higher trim levels. So
yeah.
Otherwise, you get like a 12-inch, like a horizontal screen, touch screen.
Yeah, well, for me here in New Jersey, we have that $5,000 cash on the hood rebate for vehicles up to $55,000. So that's a tough point for me. I don't know if I'd be able to get one of these outfitted that would be to my liking at $55,000. It's hard for me to go over that because then it's, you know, you're not only are you paying extra, but you're also losing the $55,000, the $5,000 rebate, you know? So that's kind of the what I'm looking. If I can configure one of these that I find palatable and keep it at $55,000, you know, I might jump ship from the Cybertruck to this.
I'm kind of disappointed they didn't make a two-wheel drive version of this, because they could have brought the price down even lower. So I don't know why they didn't do that.
Jordan, I guess simplicity.
Yeah.
They're trying to like have a, because they pretty much all have the same skateboard except for the battery pack sizes, which again, we still don't know.
Right.
But, it was interesting that they, you know, saved that 15.5 inch portrait screen for the top two trims and just kept the standard 12.3 inch, which is still a huge screen.
Right.
I had that on my, you know, the truck they gave me to get from the airport to the facility was a maxed out Platinum.
Okay.
It's still a really nice place to be.
Right.
But it was, you know, the internal combustion engine one and slower.
Right. So that's the thing. Let's talk more about the truck in a second. I just want to go over just one more feature. So let's talk about power or pro power on board for a second. So the truck basically acts like a generator and is able to supply 9.6 kilowatts, like we said, through 11 outlets, four in the frunk, two in the cab, and four in the bed, one of which I believe is a 240-volt outlet. So you can power pretty much anything you want, but it won't let you just like drain the battery. So customers will receive a notification on their Ford Pass app if their truck's battery falls below one-third of its total range, and they can even set it up. Excuse me. And they can even set the truck to stop using the Pro Power on board, or if the battery level approaches the distance to the nearest charging station. So, yeah, that's pretty neat. Some good party tricks there. So let's talk about Jordan. What was it like to actually ride in it? So you drove the regular Ford F-150 Platinum to this event. When was that? On Saturday? Last Saturday?
That was last Wednesday, so a week and a half ago.
Right on.
Yeah. So it was really cool.
Right. So the regular Ford F-150 cab, I guess it's pretty nice. The seats, everything is like, would you say it's like top of the class?
Yeah, it was the second highest possible, the one that they gave me to ride in. And it was, you know, initially kind of shocking and kind of to my disappointment that everything was about the same, which, you know, I like things that are really quirky and unique. I have my eyes set on Rivian and Cybertruck, but I understand the use case for this truck and the fact that they kept the cab and the bed essentially the same. I mean, actually identically in terms of interior proportions. That allows their customers to use existing accessories or components or whatever they had on their ICE F-150, and they can just plop it over to this one. So it's fundamentally brilliant, just a little boring, I guess.
Right.
But
it also helps them save money in manufacturing. They share a lot of parts, so they don't have to make a, you know, it just helps get that price down there where they have that headline $39,000 price that, you know, gets everyone's attention. Yeah. So like, tell us about the event itself. Like, so you get out there, what happens?
Yeah, they shuttled. They allowed three of us in at one time. So there was myself and then two other, I think, local newspaper journalists, I think. And we were shuttled, basically parked, and they got us through security and then had to get a bunch of like COVID testing precautions. We had to wear their specific face masks as well as goggles the whole time. And then they shuttled us all the way up to the, I guess, where they did the unveiling in a kind of an unassuming warehouse. So this was at the Michigan Proving Ground, so giant facility about an hour north of Detroit.
Right.
Really gorgeous, lots of grass and trees and hills, and, you know, a 5-mile racetrack they'd use for nothing but high speed testing. So it was cool. So they kind of did the first unveil of the truck. They showed us around, walked us through all the details, you know, physically, because the exterior of the truck is, I mean, it looks very similar, but every body panel is just slightly altered to be more aerodynamic. Even the running boards on the bottom, they're newly designed for the Lightning, to help with aerodynamics.
So like, does it share fenders, say, with the regular F-150 really?
I think it might share doors, but I think the hood and the quarter panels and the tailgate is different. The tailgate's interesting because the metal on the back is actually wider than the normal one, but the tailgate's the same size. They just added kind of a fake width look to make it look more planted and aggressive from the rear.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. So they had one truck in the building as well as a kind of a skateboard sled just sitting by itself, like you used to see in Tesla showrooms, showing kind of the battery, the motors, the inboard motors, one on each axle, the independent rear suspension. And they built a full size spare into the sled because people love their spare tires. So that was pretty cool.
Does a truck have a full size spare?
Yeah.
No. Oh, really?
Yeah. It's built into the sled. So it's not actually a fixed to the bottom of the bed necessarily. It's a to the sled. So the spare is actually, you can kind of see it right there.
Okay.
It's actually protected by the same skeleton that the battery is protected.
Okay. Yeah. Right there. So it has, the truck itself has skid plates all along the bottom to protect the battery.
Yeah. So the Lightning effectively has the FX4 package, which was an optional package. It's standard on this, and that's, not exactly, but it's the same concept of skid plates all across the bottom to protect the battery and the motors. It comes with all-terrain tires from the factory. It's 4x4 all the time. So that was kind of cool. They just tried to simplify it as much as possible.
Do you know offhand if they're using low rolling resistance tires? Because they're kind of, that's kind of an aggressive sort of tire for an electric vehicle, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I know they are specially designed tires, but I don't know who was making them. I don't know if all the production prototypes that I saw had what would be the final tires. They had said they were all getting all terrain, but that would surprise me if the final truck put that on everything.
Right. All right. So they took you all around the truck and showed you the outside. So you went on different like driving sort of demos.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had a high speed demo, and then a off-road demo and a towing demo. So we kind of, you know, each individually went with a specific driver. So first, Linda Zhang took me on the high-speed loop. She's the head engineer. And that was really cool, just kind of showing me, you know, a 0 to 60 pull. It was actually 0 to 80. But because of the high seating position of the truck, 80 felt like 55. Right. So you still have that initial shock of electric acceleration. And then we're going faster than I realized. And then we get to the bank turn going about 100, and it just felt like 70. I mean, it was kind of alarming. So nice. We'll see how many people run into the law enforcement with the initial just getting into this truck with all this power and they don't even realize it. So we kind of did that. And it was impressive how it handled, you know, because the weight distribution is quote unquote perfect, as Ford says. So probably about 50-50.
Right.
And the low center of gravity with the battery, it's alarmingly different than the normal combustion engine F-150 that is front heavy and doesn't have independent rear suspension. I mean, this one really swerved really well. She did kind of some evasive highway maneuvers kind of a thing. And we did like a 55 to 80 passing maneuver just to show how capable it was. And it was really cool. You're not getting over and then flooring it and then waiting for turbos to spool up and then passing, you just have that instantly.
Nice. So how was it off-road?
That was probably the most fun.
Okay.
So one of the, I guess the lead engineer for the off-road capabilities for Ford products in general, I think it was, he took me on this trail. And I mean, he started kind of the same way Linda did, just gunning it. And we're on really loose gravel and we're effectively power sliding like 50 miles an hour. And he was, I mean, fully in control of this truck. He was great driver. And we did a bunch of just crazy trails. They have this like crazy trail network with various trails that some have really deep ruts. Some have really significant hills where you have to test like the breakover angle. And there was a lot of times where we bottomed out, you know, he'd kind of go up over the hill and then we'd slide on the sled for a bit until the back tires caught. And then we'd go back down. And so he just pushed it really hard. And I think just the fact that this has, you know, fewer moving parts makes me feel like it'd be better off-road in the long term. It'd probably last longer just because there's not as much that can break.
Right.
And it was very capable. You know, when you put it in off-road mode, using the screen, if you have the big portrait screen, that kind of, you know, it actually lowers the torque a bit just so you're not spinning tires all the time, and helps, you know, adjust the suspension in total. And the front suspension, you know, the rear suspension is getting all the news, but the front one has also been changed, not entirely redesigned. It's just been improved to handle the extra weight. So this weighs about 1,000 pounds more than the comparable internal combustion engine F-150, but it doesn't feel like that because the suspension's tuned better and the low center of gravity just feels more planted.
It's got like a double wishbone up front with coilover shocks, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And does it have like a electronically locking sort of differential kind of idea going on there?
Yes, that was the other thing from the FX4 that they included in this. So all Lightning F-150s have that electronic locking differential. So it should be really good off-road, on-road, whatever. They wanted to make it useful in as many cases as possible. So then we went to do a towing test. So they loaded us up with this trailer you see here. 6,000 pounds is the payload they had in that trailer. So they didn't max it out necessarily. They didn't want to break the truck in front of us. But it was alarming to see how fast we could accelerate with the trailer. I mean, you wouldn't want to do that if your trailer's full of valuables, but they showed that it's possible.
And they did a 0-60
kind of deal? Yeah. And it didn't feel much slower. Like, I'm sure it was, but just the fact the in your head, you know, there's a big trailer behind you.
Right.
It doesn't really register. And we did the same. Like, we went up a 25% incline, and it just did it effortlessly. It was incredible.
Wow.
He put it in the tow haul mode, which, you know, the normal internal combustion engine just keeps your revs really high and kind of tries to use engine braking when it can. So we went down a 13% decline, and it just held it at that speed, but there's no annoying engine noise.
Right.
It's just basically taking in all the regenerative braking plus the added load and just kept your speed at what you want it to be.
Right on. That sounds cool. Let's see. So it has like four different modes altogether?
Yeah, just four. I think the one I took, the internal combustion engine, had like seven modes. I mean, it took me forever to switch between them because every time you switch mode, the screen would do some animated graphic.
Oh,
and so it took forever to switch between them. But this is just four modes, which is nice and simple. And you know, with Linda, we actually started in normal mode when she did that pull. So when you put it in sport mode, it kind of readjusts the pedal mapping a bit on the accelerator just to make it a bit more spunky, but it's not really much faster. And the other thing it does is tighten the steering, the electronic steering, just to make it feel more aggressive and direct.
Hey, so when you hooked up, was the trailer already hooked up to it, or did you get to use the trailer?
We didn't get to use that. They already had it hooked up and ready. So
okay, but that's can you tell us about it?
The trailer.
I mean that feature, how it backs itself up.
Oh yeah, they didn't really get to show us it, but you know, it should just be able to see the trailer and then back it up. And it has a rear camera on the tailgate like normal, but also a rear camera on the bed, so it can kind of use those to triangulate where it's trying to go. And the bed one's really nifty for people wanting to pull gooseneck trailers, because it's kind of a pain in the butt to see how you're lining it up in the bed when the rear camera is behind the bed.
All right,
Good feature. They kind of had a display test of almost everything else, though, like the Pro Power on board. They plugged in an air compressor, a cement mixer, a circular saw, like 10 work lights. They had it all running at the same time. So you only get that 240-volt outlet if you opt for the extended range battery, I think. And so you have, otherwise you just have four outlets in the bed.
Right.
And they did the same thing with the front, had a bunch of stuff plugged into that. So it's cool how much power. I mean, this has more outlets than my first apartment, so it's pretty impressive.
Jordan, quick question about the cameras. Yeah. Do you know, are there cameras in the front bumper that you can turn on to look at the front of the vehicle? And I'm asking because I always have a truck and I plow. And for me, when I'm putting the plow on by myself, it can be a bit of a pain because you got to line it up perfectly to get it to latch in. And I'm always like hopping out of the truck, lining it up, backing up, hopping back. It's kind of a pain, especially when you take it on and off between snowstorms. It'd be really cool if there were cameras in the front so you could see as you're pulling right into the plow to connect to the brace on the vehicle.
Yeah, I don't I'm pretty sure there is a camera up there because of their 360 camera capability, but I don't know if you can specifically tell it to like show that one, especially while driving.
I've seen it in some pictures somewhere, but let me try and find it while you guys are talking.
And I'd love if it was low, like not at the top of the vehicle, you know, in the bumper, so you could really see like what's down low there. So I mean, that'd be something that, you know, if Ford took feedback from owners, you know, which I'm sure they did, you know, one of the things that I would have screamed about, like, give me cameras in the bumper so I can see what I'm pulling into.
Yeah.
I think it's below the Ford. It's below the blue oval. So it's not that low. I think it's pretty. But that, again, as Jordan says, I don't know if you can. They didn't talk about that, whether you can select it or whether it's, you know, like you can drive with it on, like you can drive with the rear cameras on sometimes. Let me try and find Brandon's video from Motor One while you guys are chatting. You might have a shot of it in that.
Right on.
Okay, cool.
So Tom, do you think? Okay, so everyone's talking, comparing the this Ford F-150 Lightning to like the Cybertruck and the Rivian, but no one's really talking about the GMC Silverado or Chevy, whatever that is. You know, the Chevy version of their pickup truck is coming, and it's 400 miles of range, and you know, it's going to have a lot. It's going to be like a mini Hummer EV, basically, only in a more traditional shape. I don't know, but.
Yeah, I mean, they're not talking about comparing it because we don't know a lot about it yet. I think that's really why, Dom, you know, it's, it, you know, once they come out with their reveal and give us all the details, then of course, I mean, that this will be perfect to just beat to death and compare these two vehicles, even more so than, you know, the Rivian or the Cybertruck, because, you know, these are the two, you know, real American pickup trucks. I mean, the Dodge is also, but, you know, who knows where they are with electrification. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, so, yeah, I would imagine that GM's been kind of waiting for Ford to come out and do this.
Right.
So now they're like, OK, we got all their cards on the table.
Right.
Now what could we do a little bit better? You know, we're going to tweak this. We're going to change this. And then they'll come out and try to do the one upping thing. It seems like they may have the advantage on range. We don't know that for certain yet, but listen, this, the one weak point that this has, you know, is the range, in my opinion. It's not going to work for a lot of conventional pickup work trucks, even people that live, you know, in the more rural areas of America that need to cover hundreds of miles. This won't work for them. And this is something that I talked about when we did the live stream the other night. It doesn't have to. Ford sells almost a million F-150s a year. Wow. If this works for 15% of them, you know, it doesn't have to work for 85% of them.
That'd be like 150,000, but.
This is the first iteration, Dom. I know you were going to say, but, you know, and don't but me. But the next generation, you know, in you know, perhaps the 2024 F-150 might go 450 miles. So they're just dipping their toes in the water. This is going to sell, in my opinion, as many as they can make as is. Right. And it won't work for everybody. Don't try to squeeze the square peg in the round hole. But this will work for a tremendous amount of people. And I think they're going to sell as many as they'll make. And that's the big question here. What's their production capacity? How many of these are they going to make? That's what I'd like to know.
We had some guessing, or we had a post on Inside EVs yesterday about that. And I think there was one analyst who said as much as 80,000, which is, I think it's like hugely optimistic. Like if they can reach 40,000, I think that's be pretty good. They got 20,000 pre-orders in the first 12 hours. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they've doubled that by now.
Yeah. Well, they won't all convert. We know that. But still, you know, if they can do 80,000, that's, you know, less than 10%. They have to convert less than 10% of their existing customers. And that's not even including any conquest sales, bringing people in that weren't F-150 buyers.
Right.
So, you know, this. You know, I know a lot of people, and I've seen the comments, oh, this is, you know, fail, you know, the range isn't going to work. You can't tow a truck. I need to tow, you know, 5,000 pounds, you know, 600 miles at once a month. Don't get this. It's not going to work for you. Maybe the 2024, 2025 F-150 Lightning will, But this will work for more than enough people with the amount of capacity they're going to have when this launches.
Right. Yeah, I'm thinking, man, personally, I'm thinking like 30,000 vehicles would be a great, you know, number. I think Mach-E globally, I think they're targeting like 50,000 a year for global sales. It's going to be, I forget what exactly how that breaks down the U.S. to the world, but yeah. So it's going to need a lot of batteries. So to reach any sort of number. So in order to get there, to power the Lightning, they've just done a joint venture with SK Innovations that they announced yesterday. It's called Blue Oval SK, of course, taking the Blue Oval SK Innovations. Yeah. So that's expected to produce 60 gigawatt hours of batteries by 2025. And it should increase over there. Ford figures it needs 240 gigawatt hours of cells by 2030, 140 gigawatt hours of which would be for North America. So this joint venture is likely to expand, and Ford may still have to buy batteries from someone else. They have invested in solid state with BMW in, what is it, solid, what's the name of that company? Solid.
I think it might be Solid Power.
Yes. Thank you. Right. So 60 gigawatt hours by 2025, that equals 600,000 100 kilowatt hour packs. So I know, what does that tell us about Ford's ambitions here, Martin?
You know, what the whole car tells us about their ambitions is to make their version of a truck and not do it any other way. A bit like the Hummer, but the Hummer still came out with some kind of gimmicks and things to really get attention. Of course, the extreme example of that is the Cybertruck, right? But because Tesla have got nothing to improve upon in that segment, so they have to start from scratch. But this is all about their version of a of something that they know sells well. Like the interior is exactly the same as, apart from the screen, forget the screen for now, and the dash in front of the driver, some tweaks on that. But otherwise, this is, if you've had four or five of these in your driving career, just get this as the next one, right? And as they said, this isn't the be all and end all. This is their first version of, as Tom said as well, it's the first version of doing it. And so, right. Yeah, if they make 50,000 of these a year, that's a huge success, because they're going to be seen, you know, obviously sold all over the US. I did have a quick look just to check out some different territories, but I thought, yeah, just in case, are they selling them in, you know, can I get a right-hand drive reservation? I can't, but you know, they're going to sell these in every corner of the US, and they, unless you know what you're looking for, they're going to look like you're just driving a truck. And I love that so much about this, right? Because it just looks like another truck. And again, you know, we live in this world of EVs 24/7. It's what we read, watch, write about, talk about on podcasts and make videos about all the time. There are so many people that don't want to look like they're driving an electric truck, but there are so many people who this will work for, because they want to drive either a Silverado or, you know, an F-150, not a Hummer, because it's kind of too, you know, it's too special, too top end, but and this is so, so good for them. And I love it. It's additive to the market. Well, I get so excited about cars like this. It's additive to the market. I don't know how many Cybertruck reservation holders have gone, wait, I want one of these instead. I think, you know, Tom's probably an outlier, I'm guessing. I think a lot of people who order the Cybertruck are probably into that vehicle, and a lot won't go ahead and order. But this is so perfect. This is such a perfect vehicle for them to make right now. Don't worry about the battery size, as Tom says. Don't worry. And also, Tom, you said on the live stream something that you've said a few times before, and I love it. You know, if you are looking at 230 miles or 300 miles, and then, you know, someone's in your ear or your social media or a friend or family, where, yeah, but Cybertruck will go twice the distance, and you want a Tesla because Elon Musk is going to make his own batteries and it's going to go further. Ignore people like that. Write down how many miles you do. Shut out all the noise of the people that are going to be in your face about range. Write down what you do. And it's funny enough, because I took a new Kona in this week on Tuesday. So the new 21 model Kona arrived. And what's today? Friday? And I've done 8 miles. Now I know we're in kind of COVID and we're coming out of lockdown. But I'm like, well, I've taken my kid to nursery. I've gone to the shops. I've done, and like, because I'm keeping a track of it. Like, I've done 8 miles. That's insane.
Was but don't just do electric?
It. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So okay. We'll talk about it on next week's show. It's too busy this week. But but don't just do it for a day or a week. If you're serious, do it for a month or 3 months, as Tom always says. Keep a log, stick it, do a little printout, or put it on your phone or device, stick it in the glove box or your passenger seat so you don't forget about it, and write down what you do. And this is so suitable. Honestly, it's so suitable for so many people. You know, if you want to tow, you know, an Airstream and a horse box, and you've got 12 kids and 14 dogs, it's not for you, right? But it's not meant to be for everyone. And that's the luxury Ford have got here. Tesla had to come out with the Cybertruck and make, in their view, the best truck that's ever been made, and we're going to take it to Mars, and it's the future of all trucking. Because they didn't have anything to build upon. Whereas Ford and Chevy, and to an extent with the Hummer brand as well, you can just iterate a little bit better, and it's all they've got to do. All they've got to do. And if you want to do, you know, 1,000-mile road trips, this isn't for you. But it's not meant to be for you. And that's what I think people get a bit offended when they go, oh, I really want the truck, but the range isn't enough. And I say to them, it's not for you. And it, obviously it hurts a little bit, because they say, but I want it to be for me. And you're like, well, I know that hurts. It sucks. But wait, give it a couple of years. Better battery technology. But trust me, the batteries going in from SK Innovation are tip top. Some of the best out there.
And they still made it for most people. It's amazing how much like the Pro Power Onboard, the Mega Power Frunk, and this new vehicle to load, like powering your house. I mean, those are things that currently kind of sets us apart, or really just gets the attention. It may not look like a really unique, crazy Rivian or Cybertruck vehicle. They don't have the styling to generate the headlines, but they have the features. And I think, you know, one of the engineers who helped design the charging and inverter was someone from Texas. And so he had the personal connection to people who were powering their houses from their internal combustion engine trucks using Pro Power Onboard, or they just power their refrigerator or something. So this being able to power the whole house was really intriguing. And they actually had a fake house set up in the warehouse, complete with a refrigerator and TV and lights and everything.
Awesome.
And they showed the house losing power, and the truck automatically took over, and then within minutes, the house was back up to normal power again. And so, Tom, you mentioned earlier, they have that Ford Charge Station Pro charger that gets installed in your wall, and they partner with Sunrun to do all these installations. And that also comes with another bigger box next to it, which kind of looks like a smaller power wall that has all the inverter technology in it. So it's really interesting. You can use your app, your Ford app, to basically tell it, you know, to configure it how you want. Do you want the truck to automatically switch over to power your house? Or do you want to leave it on manual? Or do you want it to power your house for such and such of the battery? Like you could say, stop at 50%. I need that 50% to get somewhere. And the same goes with Pro Power Onboard. You have all the functionality within the app to tell it to power all your tools and then stop once you realize how much range you need to get home or to the nearest charging station.
Wow, I want to pick up one of the comments we had here from JT Mellis. They asked, before I made the comment that, you know, if you've got to tow 6,000 or 7,000 pounds on a 600 mile road trip, this isn't going to, once a month, this isn't probably going to be the right truck for you. So he asked, why not just recharge during that 600 mile trip, Tom? And you could, you know, I'm not saying it would be impossible to do that. But here's the thing. Is it practical? Let's say you're towing 6,000 or 7,000 pounds at highway speeds. Even if you have the extended range battery, the 300 mile battery, the most you're going to get is maybe 150 miles. I mean, you know, of range towing 6,000 or 7,000 pounds at 75-80 miles an hour. So, you know, and then you don't get to use every ounce of your range. You know, you're not going to go to zero and then charge to 100%. So a 600 mile road trip might mean 4 or 5 stops on the way. And there are 45, 50 minute stops to get it back up to 80%. And then the chargers have to be placed at the right location, at the right increment. You know, that they're not everywhere, especially rural America. You know, you don't just get to choose the one you stop at. You know, your hope that you make the next one. So maybe an 8 hour drive in a gas F-150 could be 12 or 13 or 14 hours to make that same trip in the Lightning. So of course you could do it, but do you want to? You know, if this right. is part of your job and what you do, and once a month you really have to do these long tow trips, you don't have to force that square peg in the round hole. Like I said before, could you do it? Theoretically, you could do it, but you might want to wait for the next iteration of the electric Lightning if you need to make these really long trips where you're towing heavy equipment.
I just want to mention this real quick. There's also the issue of actually having places where you can charge a vehicle with your trailer on, like a tow through station at Electrify America.
They don't exist.
No. Well, you can pull sideways and just block the entire row of Electrify America chargers. Right. You know,
well, Tesla has a few different chargers that there's some of their superchargers that have that, you know, that tow through charging availability, right?
Yeah, and again, there's lots of them, so it's not so bad. When you think about the Bolt, for instance, we don't talk about the Bolt very much on this podcast. There are $150, $200 a month deals out there. Maybe not for the 2022 Bolt or whatever it's called, or 21 Bolt, but certainly the one before. And I think this fits in a really similar place in terms of, I think there'll be a time when we just don't talk about this truck as much as other things that dominate the headlines, but it'll just get on and sell at 40 grand.
Yeah. I noticed there's a good uptick of people on the Inside EVs forum. There's a number of regular members who put in reservations. And so, yeah, hopefully we'll be tracking that pretty closely there. Yeah, pretty excited about that. Oh, speaking of the Bolt EV, the new one, the 2022 version, is leaving the factory and will be appearing in your stores around the country any day. So if you have an interest in the Bolt EV, or the Bolt
EV. It's a little early. It's like a month earlier than they said.
Yeah, I know. We just got the notice the other day, and I was like, oh, that's great, because I really like to see that in person. I mean, I saw the original pre-production, whatever, but yeah, I want to see how it actually looks like in the showroom next to everything else.
Out of interest, as we've got someone on the podcast who has a reservation for both, Tom, like, gut feeling right now, how are you feeling about which one you would end up with, Cybertruck or this?
God, I wish I had more guidance from Tesla on what the Cybertruck, when it's going to come, what it's going to look like. You know, we know basically what it's going to look like, but we know there's going to be changes. Honestly, Martin, I'm like 50-50 right now. Maybe that'll change once Tesla shows the final design and gives a little bit more guidance on deliveries. You know, I wasn't one of the real early Cybertruck reservation. I think I reserved mine. I have to check. I think like 3 or 4 weeks after it was released. So I may be way back in the queue. I may actually be able to get the Ford before I could get a Cybertruck. So that's going to play into it then too. Price is going to be important. Like, you know, there were a lot of comments here about the $40,000 version. We don't know a lot about that. Like, you know, on their website, it said something like a commercially inspired or something like that. It's kind of tailored for commercial use. So we know it's going to be kind of stripped down. I think Ford probably did a lot to get it down under the $40,000 price point. So obviously that isn't going to be something that I'd be interested in. I'm going to want the extended battery pack. That might be 9 or 10 grand. So I might be starting at 50,000 and then a couple of goodies. Like I said, I'm trying to keep this at 55 and below. So that's a long answer to a short question. I don't know, Martin. I really don't. I'm a toss-up right now.
And just quickly, Jordan, from getting out of the F-150 that you were shuttled in and getting into this, did it seem exactly in terms of the interior, apart from the big screen, did everything feel like it was in the same place? So literally you could just focus on the powertrain rather than thinking, oh my goodness, this is all new. What do I look at first? Or were there subtle differences? What was that transition like getting between the two?
I was essentially identical. I mean, even the digital gauge cluster in front of the driver is the same piece. So it's only the Mustang Mach-E screen, which it's weird. Different Ford people said it was the same. Some people said it was slightly tweaked. I'm not sure, but essentially the same, you know, maybe modified to fit the Ford, the F-150. But it was pretty much identical. I mean, the same center console that flips open to like a desk that everyone seems to love on TikTok. Like, it's the same truck, which works. I mean, don't fix it if it ain't broke. That's what they say.
Right.
So, and I think they, you know, the light bar across the front and the back, which I think is also only on higher trims. It's a good design feature. It kind of reminds me of Rivian, although Rivian had nothing to do with this truck. The reverse might be true, though, so we'll see what Rivian has to offer as far as real-world functionality. But I kind of had the same thought in my head of, like, what would I go with right now? Because I'm very intrigued by the Cybertruck. There's things we don't know, but that almost looks on paper to be most comparable to this with the price and everything. But once you spec a Lightning up to the price I would want, it's close enough to a Rivian, which has air suspension and, you know, a few things I care about more. I'd rather just do the Rivian. It'd be that close in price.
Yeah.
I like to poke the hardcore Tesla people just a little to see how they react. And I was talking to some people on Twitter this week about the Cybertruck. And I said, there's one, maybe two in the world, right? When they want to bring it to New York for Saturday Night Live, it gets shipped there on the back of a diesel low loader. It rolls around on some nice flat asphalt for some nice pretty shots. And then it gets tucked away in cotton wool, a bit like the Roadster, which is now so old it's in a museum. Unveiled in November 2017, they made one of them in the world, they skipped making them. They made one, a concept. Let's not bother making them. Let's put it in a museum straight away. Same with and they were like, no, the Cybertruck is Elon's going to show you. And I'm like, look, there's possibly two in the world, but really, what Ford have done, which is to take journalists in real situations, they've made hundreds of these, they've tested them at minus 30 and you know plus 50 degrees Celsius, and they've put them through their paces. They're doing proper engineering. I'm not doubting that Tesla are doing proper engineering. They make great EVs. They're just not telling us or showing us that this work is going on in the background. All they'll say is, well, hey, it's going to be built in Texas and we haven't built the factory, so Elon did say this week, oh, it'll be out by the end of the year. I felt like he had got a bit defensive with all the F-150 stuff. So he was like, yeah, no, we'll get it done by the end of the year, even though they haven't got a factory built yet.
So I was going to address this a little bit later.
Do it now.
So basically, the Cybertruck, a little while ago, Elon said it's coming out, first deliveries in Q2 of next year, which will be pretty much in line with the F-150 Lightning. So it's going to be like a toss-up of which one gets out there first. Yesterday, I was thinking that the Cybertruck would actually be out there earlier, but then I got looking closer, and then I saw that old tweet from Elon saying Q2. But he did say, actually, this week or the other day, that production will be beginning by the end of this year. So they'll be building them. And the factory, people are pointing out there's no factory yet, of course, but I mean, it's coming along pretty well. I don't know if you can see it in the show notes, but there's a little link to a video. Maybe I don't want to show that because of copyright infringements. Don't do that. Sorry. Oh my God. But it's coming along. It's like, you know, a lot of it's built, and there's like presses already installed for the Model Y production that's going to happen there as well. And so that's all happening. And so there's a good chance we'll see that, you know, the same time as the F-150 Lightning. So I'm not really too concerned about that. We've seen Tesla, and I have to take this side of the Tesla fanboy today, but we've seen Tesla build like the factory in China like really fast, and that thing's still being built out. It's producing and they're building. So, you know, they can juggle a lot of things at once with these things. But as you say, I would like to see more transparency of what's going on with the testing and what's the final actual version. I think we're going to see it look pretty much like the original concept version. Just like that. If you're watching this on YouTube or on Twitch, it's going to look pretty much, I think, like that, which is...
Yeah, Elon said maybe 3% smaller, and that's right. The only thing he's really confirmed. So right. I'm really curious. I'm just always... That's the word for me, is curious and intrigued by Tesla all the time. Every time something happens, right? It's like so curious. Like, and it's funny because they're so behind on some things, but then they like suddenly jump into the driver's seat and make it happen. And right. Then you have like some GM things who are ahead of schedule. So it kind of all balances, I guess. But I'm intrigued. I love a Cybertruck and the ATV or whatever they call it. I think that'd be super cool. And I was, you know, along with the rest of the world, blown away when the Roadster came out of the back of the semi at that event.
Right.
And, you know, the Roadster's at the museum now. And on the plaque, it says 0-60 in 1.1 seconds with the SpaceX package, which is just...
And they never have to prove it. They never have to make any of them. All those poor influencers that were flogging it to death, they're never going to get theirs. They never even have to make them now. They're just, 1.1. Yeah, did it in 1.1. Yeah. Like, they're not going to prove it.
Kids in the future will be like, yeah, that happened, I'm sure.
You're so skeptical, Martin.
Why would they make the Roadster? The company exists on profits from the 3 and the Y.
Yeah, they don't make the profit. You know,
the Y.
A hell of a vehicle. It's still, you know, part of their brand. And still, it's still Elon's, you know, significant ego attached to this thing.
So, don't get me wrong. He wants it out there, but they can't get the S and the X. You know, the X has now gone. People are being told October in the US, let alone everywhere else. The S has got a delivery event now, but like they don't need to make the Roadster. It did its job at the time. It you know, it's a one-off. It came out the back of a lorry with some fake specs and off they go. It got them to where but to survive as a company and grow.
No, they don't need it.
They need the Y. They just need the Y to do well and to make money, and they'll be absent. As Tom says, when the Cybertruck comes out, it will be the best EV truck on the market. It just in terms of, but how many, in terms of the powertrain, it will, and battery technology, it will be the best.
Right.
It's how many people can stomach the styling if you're a traditional truck guy or girl.
Well, they have probably, I wouldn't be surprised if they have like a million pre-orders right now. Like some of those won't turn into orders maybe, but they're going to sell as many as they can possibly make for the near conceivable future, I think. It depends, unless it comes out and it's a total, once people start driving and maybe it doesn't handle well, or maybe there's other issues with it. We don't know yet. Let's move away from this truck for a second and just talk about the Tesla Model S Plaid that you mentioned earlier. So I was under the impression that the first deliveries of the Model S Plaid were pushed back like way into the summer. And that may be true if you're ordering one now, but, the very first ones are going to be delivered very soon, like the 3rd of June. So Elon Musk announced on Twitter that Tesla will hold a delivery event on that day at its factory in Fremont, taking the opportunity to remind us that it will also be the fastest production car ever. I think he means quickest. with a sub 2 second 0-60 with rollout, of course. So probably several tenths lower than from stationary to 60 mph. So probably like 2 seconds. But it doesn't matter. It's going to be plenty fast. And I don't know if anything's going to be beat on the drag strip. Maybe the Lucid Air. So while it's been a while since there was a Tesla event, and I think the last one was Battery Day, and the last vehicle event was probably a Cybertruck debut. So I don't know about you all, but I'm kind of looking forward to this. As a reminder, the Model S Plaid is the tri-motor version evolution of the car and has the revised interior with a large horizontal screen, the yoke-style steering wheel, no physical gear selector, and it starts at $119,990. So, Tom, are you going to this event? And let's see. What do you hope to learn about the car, regardless of whether you attend? Personally, I'm thinking what I want to learn is... I'm hoping that the production version of the Cybertruck is going to make its surprise debut there as well.
Yeah, I mean, that to be honest with you, I don't need to learn too much about the Plaid. I'd like to know more about the other vehicles, as you mentioned, like what's the timeline on Cybertruck? Do we have any new information on Roadster, which, you know, I doubt that would come. But these events, we tend to get some more, you know, goodies at the events than what's on the vehicle itself. The big thing is we got this first deliveries at, you know, June 3rd, but is this going to be like some of the Tesla releases where, you know, we have a couple of vehicles and then it takes months to get any kind of volume? I'm already up to 3 people that I know that I communicate with online that had Model S Plaids on order that canceled their reservations and bought another car. 2 of them bought Taycans and the other one bought a gas car. These people were promised cars in January. You know, they plunked down their money long time ago, and now it's 5 months and they still don't have good solid communication on, okay, you know, we're sorry for the delay, you know, you'll have your car in July or the end of June. So You know, it's a problem with Tesla that they do take their customers for granted, and they've been getting away with it. So, you know, I mean, it's not the right thing to do, but these are people that are willing to spend $100,000 plus on their vehicles, and they're just, you know, they plunked down their deposit months and months ago, and they have no guidance on when they're going to get their car. And then they get a tweet that, oh yeah, first deliveries are going to be in June. Well, great. Well, how about me? I don't care about that guy getting his car on June 3rd. You know, when am I getting my car? There's still no real clear guidance on that. And that's, you know, Tesla does a lot of things right. I like the company. I bought two Teslas. I drive a Model 3 daily, but they also do a lot of things wrong, in my opinion. And this is one of them. I think they've handled this pretty poorly from a customer point of view.
Yeah, I'd like to see more transparency. Martin, do you want to yell at Tesla a little bit more?
No, you know what? the problem is, I like them so much. I admire so much what they do and how they, like, we wouldn't have these other EVs to talk about if it hadn't been for Tesla 10 years ago. So if I'm just a blatant fanboy, then everyone gets bored. So I like to poke them occasionally and take the flack. But no, I'm unfortunately a raving fan of Tesla. And I think inevitably, the performance is going to dominate. So the 200 miles an hour, the 1.99 seconds, you know, we've seen some videos recently of it pounding around Laguna Seca. I think people are going to get really preoccupied with that. But, you know, in terms of this car plotting out their future kind of vision, in terms of, as you say, things like no gear selectors, removing even more tactile things from the cabin, but also aligning the vehicles with that landscape screen and a kind of common design language. We'll get more clues of what the Cybertruck kind of user interface might look like, or that might be totally different. I don't know when it comes out. So I think it will tell us more things about, you know, their vision and you know, the next few years of. What kind of cars they want to make, rather than the actual, as Tom says, we know what we know about the car. And of course, people will go do drag videos and they'll do top speeds, but no one cares. I mean, you can't use that performance on a public road unless you want to lose your license or you're an idiot. So it's pointless anyway. So I think that's what I'm most excited about with Model S. And of course, there'll be a lot of headlines about only getting half a steering wheel as well, but I'm sure they'll sell you a full one for a reasonable price.
Hey, Jordan, do you think there'll be a one more thing Cybertruck?
I would love that. You know, I'm really curious about this too because of that, like, yoke steering wheel. I know in Europe they've already, like, I think certain countries require the circular ones still. So Tesla is fitting these with circular ones as well. But, and it might be a factory option that, like Martin said, you have to pay more for. You have to pay for the rest of the steering wheel. And so I'm curious, like, I think that will be a bit of a hinting precursor to the Cybertruck, you know, how, because that was unveiled with the yoke and everyone kind of freaked out about that.
Yeah, right.
I think it makes sense, especially from a UI UX perspective, just having a unified horizontal screen, which is funny because now some other people are going back to the portrait. So I don't know if there's really a right or wrong way to do that. It just depends what you like as a customer. But I hope they have a one more thing, or just give us something. Like Tom said, any little bit on the Cybertruck or the Roadster, like, we'll take anything we can get at this point. We're eager for information, especially because of all the delays.
I think the risk is if June 3rd doesn't happen, I think that alarm bells ring then, because on the earnings call in January, Elon said, yeah, maybe next week we'll do a proper call about S and X. Never happened. Like Tom says, you know, stuff gets announced. Hey, yeah, we'll tell you more. It never happens. And I think if June 3rd rolls around and goes again and it's all quiet, and then there's just more concerns about,
oh, you know, they, like, have to have the event.
They have to have it. And if doesn't happen, like, you know, they're obviously moving forward at a rapid pace. And, you know, factories are, you know, people just go and look at YouTube at the daily drone videos of Berlin and Austin. What was dirt months ago is now, you know, it's now asphalt and lighting. And
Berlin's supposed to be up by the end of the year too now, I guess.
Oh, it's meant to be summer, but anyway, they're a bit behind.
Yeah.
And look, if it takes them 18 months, that's fine. It doesn't have to be a year to the day like Shanghai was. So, that's incredible progress they're making. It's just about the vehicles and communicating, and maybe the batteries for the more nerdy of us, like what's going on. But yeah, if June doesn't happen, that's going to be a real problem.
So this is one of our headlines that we haven't talked about yet. We should probably hit before we end the show. So we talked about Canoe a couple months back when its pickup truck debuted. It also has a van, which was first introduced back in September of 2019. Now the company has released its official price and has begun taking orders. As you can see, if you're watching this on YouTube or Twitch, it's a unique looking vehicle. It comes in four different trims: base, premium, adventure, and delivery. Delivery, I would imagine, would be like a commercial-oriented vehicle. The most powerful version will have up to 300 horsepower and 332 pound-feet of torque, so it's not a toy, and it has a range of about 250 miles. They say it will come to market in 2022. That's next year, so that's pretty soon, with a price ranging from $34,750 to $49,950. So that's relatively affordable for a vehicle this size. It'll fit 5 to 7 passengers. It's like $100 refundable deposit. It rolls on 19-inch wheels, so yeah, it's not a toy. It looks like to me like it'd make a great ride sharing vehicle. So, Jordan, real quick, while I have you, what do you make of this thing? Is this something that speaks to you at all, or who do you see buying this?
Yeah, I see half of Boulder buying it. Out here, it's famous for the van life. Big in Colorado. And, you know, I can look down my street right now and see two vans, you know, Ford Transits or Quigley conversions or whatever that have been converted to campers.
Right.
So this would sell like wildfire because Boulder is half van people and half extremely environmentally conscious by an EV. And a lot of that has crossover. So this will, I will see so many of these here. It's I don't know. It's cool. I like their approach on their website. This says one color, and then underneath that says endless wraps. I think that's amazing.
right.
So they kind of went like, you know, fundamentally Cybertruck approach on that. You know, just here's the color, do what you want with it.
Right.
And a lot of people do that anyway. So
I think, sorry to interrupt, I think that legacy dealerships should start selling wraps. You know, we talk about how electric vehicles are going to really hurt their business model, which is relies on service department and generating a lot of cash for them. I think all the car companies should start, the dealerships should start ordering wraps selling wraps because it's getting so popular now for vehicles. They could make an extra, you know, $1,000, $1,500 sheer profit per vehicle. So many people right out of the factory would like to pick up their car already wrapped. I wrapped my car. And I would have much preferred if I could have just picked it up the day I picked it up and, you know, and had it all done and ready to go rather than going through the hassle of, you know, having to drop it off somewhere. So I'm glad you pointed that out, Jordan, about, you know, that they're going to offer endless wraps. I think smart dealerships should start doing it. Some real upscale dealerships do. I know BMW of Manhattan does. I think that should cascade across the industry now and it maybe help them pick up some of the lost revenue they're going to have from the little service that electric vehicles need.
Yeah, it's a good shout. So rather than getting an oil change, you go back and go, look, some stone chips or like I had a dink and the wrap got a bit. And then, you know, they got somebody on staff who's fully trained. They can just cut that piece out or do a join and make it look perfect again. And that's good revenue. That's a great idea.
It's like a whole new color center. Your car every couple of years.
I want
it red now.
I mean, a lot of people talk about dealerships losing revenue from fixing cars. They could be, you know, make a lot. This could be a great revenue stream for them. You know, once like they could do that kind of stuff at dealerships rather than at the factory because it, you know, it takes up a lot of factory space and things. That's, you know, could be an extra service for them.
A comment saying if it's pre-wrapped, you can't inspect the paint. Why inspect it? It's going to be wrapped. So you don't need
And when did paint inspection really play a big role before Tesla? You know, like, did you ever hear anybody talk about that? Like, I'm picking up my car. Go inspect it. Make sure the panels are straight. Make sure the paint is great. Yeah, there's been plenty of cases where cars from other manufacturers have had paint problems or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, you could go through the process of come down, check the car out. You approve it. You sign off on it. Okay, come back in 2 days to pick it up. It'll be wrapped. So you could do that.
And it's brilliant too from a, you know, a lot of people want their cars, especially if you spend a decent amount of money on it, either wrapped or PPF to protect the paint. And the other side is you get creative outlet of what your car looks like. Everyone loves a car that like, especially if you're buying one of these where it's a statement piece in and of itself, you love adding that personal flair of this is mine. It's bright orange. No one else has done this. at least that I know.
Absolutely. Right. Every dealership, in my opinion, if I own dealerships right now, I'd be offering PPF, ceramic coating, and wraps.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, and huge opportunity to upsell.
We've got three cars on the driveway. If I had like a certain favorite color or shade or something that I personally liked, I'd have them all done. Like I'd have all of my cars look just because I like things lining up, right? Some people would want them all different and crazy, an individual. I would have all my cars the same shade because they're all from different manufacturers. Mm-hmm. And that's such a, that's not even crossing my mind until today.
Right. Yeah. The personalization, it could be, it could be a huge thing that, I don't know. It doesn't seem like the OEMs have really clued into this yet, but yeah.
I think when Cybertrucks start delivering, the DeLorean used market will also explode because people will want to be seen with a Cybertruck and a DeLorean in their driveway.
Yes, they'll want both. Yeah, they'll want both.
That'd be cool, actually. That's great. Great point. All right. So yeah, we're deep in. We should wrap this up, I guess. So I guess that brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube, or a rating if you're listening on another platform. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Longley is at Tomalog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Jordan, where are you at?
I'm mostly on Instagram. I do have a Twitter though. I don't know what the handle is, but probably Chief Sheaf. That's usually what I am.
Chief Sheaf. Okay. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Kyle should be back next week. He's in the air now. He'll be he's at Amelia Island this week. So, and I know there's going to be some special electric vehicles there. That's going to be really cool.
I'll mostly say just go see the out of spec videos that we did on the F-150. That's mostly what I've contributed to.
right. Yes. If you want to, So that's a really great video. Actually, I watched that myself. Jordan and Kyle sat down and talked about the whole riding experience, and Kyle, asked you really great questions to, bring out a lot of good information there. So that's definitely, if you're interested in the F-150 Lightning, what the experience is like, go and check that out for sure. And also click subscribe and tap that bell icon on our channel for notifications, and we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.